Hello and welcome to Authentic Parenting, a podcast that gives you ideas and strategies for personal growth in the practice of parenting. I am your host, Anna Seewald, a parent educator, and I help conscious parents to stay calm and connected to themselves and their children through trauma-informed education. If this is your first time tuning in, welcome and thank you so much for joining us. Normally, I have some solo episodes and interviews on this podcast, and once a month, the last Thursday of every month, I have what I call the monthly special episode where I get to co-host the show with one of my colleagues and we get to answer some of your parenting questions. So today I have with me a person who has never been on the podcast before. She's a new friend. She's a new colleague that I met, and I invited her to co-host this podcast with me, a lovely person, and I can't wait for her to introduce herself. Hi, Marilupe.
Hi, Anna. So I'm Marilupe de la Calle. I'm delighted to be here today. I am the mother of two phenomenal human beings. Two girls, one who for 9 years has invited me to my highest potential as a human, and a girl who's 6 and a half, she will tell you, and a half, that's very important. And she invites me also every day to let go of fear and to enjoy life to the fullest. So I'm a lucky mom. I am a certified parenting by connection instructor by the beautiful organization named Hand in Hand Parenting, a non-for-profit based in California. And I live here in the United States with my husband and girls, but I was actually born and raised in Mexico. But I don't want to come today as an expert or as a teacher, because everyone listening truly is the expert in their families, and the true teachers are the children. So actually, inspired by one of your most remarkable guests in this podcast, your daughter, Ella, today, I want to come as the inner child version of myself, who is deeply, deeply grateful to you, Anna, for recognizing that she has something valuable to say.
Oh, of course you do. I'm so happy we have connected. And yes, definitely. And we have so much in common. We both have seen earthquakes. We have to do a show about that.
Yes. So yeah, so thank you again. And I'm coming here not as an expert. Actually, I think of myself as a vehicle connected to her soul to spread a message that is larger than myself.
Yes, that's great. We are all experts. When it comes to parenting, there is no expert. Every mom and dad is the expert in their own home. I'm the expert in my own home. I do give out some advice, some opinions oftentimes that may or may not resonate with people, but that's okay. Yeah. You know, we're sharing stories, discussions, thought-provoking ideas and things of that nature. So you shouldn't feel that pressure that you're not an expert. You are an expert, and maybe I'm an expert in something else, but I'm definitely not an expert in parenting. I want to clarify that. I don't like when people introduce me in some workshops or summits and they say, here is Anna Seewald, parenting expert. I'm like, oh, don't use those two words together. That's terrible.
Yeah. And also, like, nobody knows better than you, mom or dad, like what makes your dad, your child laugh. Nobody knows what are their quirks and how to get them up in the morning. Like, that's something that you and only you know. So you are really the expert in your own family.
Yes. So in today's episode, the monthly special episode has normally three segments. In segment one, we both share a parenting story from our home, a mistake, a failure, a mishap, or a triumph story perhaps that we handled or mishandled, and we offer fresh insights and perspective and helpful tips. In segment two, we answer our listener questions, and we have some amazing questions for this month. And in segment three, we share with our listeners favorite finds of the month, what we have read, books, podcasts we have discovered, or some other resources that we think might be helpful to our listeners. Before we get to the episode, though, I want to give a shout out to one of my listeners and read her review on Apple Podcast. She left a very touching review, and I want to say thank you to that person and acknowledge her. Her username is Bored to Death. I love this username. And she writes, life-changing and uplifting. Anna's podcast was recommended to me by my therapist. I had been struggling with overwhelming anxiety and depression and needed more tools to heal myself and repair a very fractured relationship with my toddler daughter. I wasn't able to parent in the way I truly wanted, and the podcast's stories and advice allowed me to forgive myself and my daughter, find some grace for both of us, and make an intentional effort to be more connected and loving. I especially loved last week's episode, which discussed the quote-unquote loss that comes with becoming a mommy and how to stay calm in the moment. I have struggled with my new mom self significantly, and I haven't been able to find the words to express it until last week. During the podcast, I found myself saying yes out loud multiple times. The calm strategies have also been so helpful. My daughter and I are both highly spirited and highly sensitive, so we tend to work each other up fairly quickly over small things. On one instance, when the car seat buckle wasn't just right, I said out loud to both of us, "This is not an emergency," and it truly helped. Anna, thank you for your gift to the world and giving free access to such needed information. I am a better mother because of you and look forward to more inspiring stories, useful tools, and thought-provoking discussions. And that's the end of the review. And wow. I'm very touched and moved, and it brought tears to my eyes. And I just want to say thank you to this lovely human being and to her therapist who recommended the podcast. It is feedback like this that helped me get up in the morning and continue doing the podcast. It's not easy always, but knowing what people enjoy and like and want more of helps me to create and keep going. So thank you everyone for listening, and let's get to our exciting show today, Marilupe.
Thank you. What a beautiful review.
I know. So Marilupe, why don't we begin our first segment, and let me throw you into the fire right away, and please share a story from your life, from your home with us today.
Beautiful. Well, thank you. So it's a series of moments rather than just one. I have, as I said, two daughters, and I really make a point of not overscheduling them. But this semester, this spring term, it happens that for extracurricular activities, we have back-to-back classes. So my little one goes to gymnastics in the same sports complex as my oldest. My little one is in gymnastics. I get to spend this time with my oldest as we wait for her sister, and then we switch. My oldest goes to her taekwondo class, and then I'm spending quality time with my little one. So that happens on Wednesdays only. But so there was this Wednesday a couple of weeks ago in which there was a lot of commotion, not commotion, but lots of noise and a lot of people in the waiting area for the gymnastics class. So my oldest was asking me, "Mommy, can we step outside for a minute?" So we were actually outside, right outside the door. And she was kind of upset. So I was listening in a deep way. It's such in the way that hand in hand suggests, like really listening to compassion, with compassion to whatever the child is saying. And in this particular case, she was a little upset. So I was really focused on listening to her, connecting with her. All my presence was there. And because I was so attuned to the moment, I missed track of time. So this is a big, big fail, because only a few minutes passed past the hour, but all of a sudden I realized that her class has started. And also, my little one's class has just ended and I'm outside the door. So my oldest, who was already upset, starts really, really losing it. I'm freaking out, thinking, I'm going to be late and I don't like that. She still had to come inside the gymnastics waiting area to grab her stuff. So in one moment, we open that door and I have my nine-year-old like super agitated and almost screaming like, I'm going to be late, freaking out. And then I turn to the right And I see my little one putting her shoes on, sitting on the floor, devastated because all the other friends had left. It had just been 4 minutes that I missed the pickup time in which all the parents gathered their children. And she was by herself putting her shoes on, sobbing, like in so much sadness and pain because I had abandoned her forever. So I actually made the comment out loud, like, oh my gosh, I have two upset children at the same time. So my oldest ran to her class. And so I had the opportunity to sit down and really listen to my little one. And I just stayed there and listened. I sat on the floor and I put her on my lap and she was sobbing, like tears were actually jumping out of her eyes. And she was telling me how her scariest thing had come true, which is that I had abandoned her forever and she thought I would never come back. I was just outside the door, but she didn't know that. And it was just 4 minutes, but she has a special sensitivity to being separated from me. So she was truly devastated. So I just listened and listened some more until she was able to offload all that sadness and she was back to being herself again. She was cheered up and we went on. So that was that for the day. So we repaired it. And then, after listening to her, I did apologize. I reassured her that I would never leave her behind. That was that for that day. But then a couple of days later, it was pickup time at her school. And here I was at home and I wanted to do one more little thing. And this time I did it again, but there was a different flavor to this because I actually knew that I might be a little late and I did it anyway. So I come pick her up and again, she's like devastated. She was the very last in line. It was only a couple of minutes, but she told me, she looked at me and she said, "Mommy, you did it again." I was like, "Oh, I did." And I, of course, apologized. We repaired it, but I was like thinking, okay, so this is a different thing. I have to explore this. On my own. So I went to my listening partner so this is a beautiful exchange with other adults where the children are not present. And I was able to really go deep and explore, why am I doing this? Like the first time was actually a mistake, but the second one I kind of knew. And why did I do it anyway? Knowing that this is such a tender subject for her. And I got to really explore and dig deep. And I found out that it was actually something, it had something to do with sort of like an old wound of mine and sort of like this selfish thinking of, well, if I have suffered, why shouldn't she? Or like, it's my turn or something like that. I'm like, oh, I'm bringing this into consciousness. This is what was actually causing me to react in this way. And I'm very proud that I was able to bring this to light. And so now I can actually work on it in a more conscious way. But I was sort of like hijacked by a unconscious wound. And this is why I acted in that way. So it's like a series of moments involving multiple tools and just a lot of repair work. But now I'm aware of this and I'm more capable of catching it before it happens again.
I know that fear in children can be very real, that abandonment fear, especially when they're young. Oftentimes, I see in playgrounds, this is apart from your story, but parents sometimes use it as a parenting tool and they say, bye, I'm leaving, thinking that's going to get their child to cooperate in the moment. But that's such an ineffective tool. It's the child's worst nightmare when a parent threatens them by a separation. Yeah. We know, of course, as parents, that we're never going to do that. But the way the child interprets it, it's completely different to them. It's real. My mom is leaving, and here I am in this big playground with strangers. And that triggers that alarm system in them. And that's why they start to cooperate. And it could be huge, this issue for children, especially children who had birth trauma, who were in NICU.
Yes.
Oftentimes that can create that separation anxiety can be even bigger. But it seems like you are on top of it and you know what it is and hopefully you won't be late. And if you are, that would be another opportunity to perhaps talk and share and repair.
Yeah.
But having two kids at the same time who are emotionally upset, I think that requires a lot of inner strength just to be patient and listen to both and divide your attention and deep listening. It's hard.
It is. And also so rewarding when you see that they both can get to the other side and feel your presence. So yeah, very, very powerful. Mm. Yeah. So what's your story, Anna, for this week?
So my story is similar to yours. Again, it's about listening to children's emotions. And I think it's helpful. I talked about how to stay calm in a couple of episodes back, right? How to remain calm in the moment in that episode, how important it is for us to be calm and present so that we can listen to our children's feelings. But the story I'm going to share illustrates how hard it was for me to remain calm in the moment. And I'm choosing this story, and it didn't happen recently, this story, but I'm choosing to share because it goes along with the theme that we have started here in the podcast. So my daughter comes home. My husband usually picks up my daughter and he drops her at home. And I'm usually home when that happens, unless I have work or something like that. But most of the time I'm home. So I go downstairs one day, I open the car door, and my daughter is a hot mess. She's crying. She has tears. My husband looks at me and he says, she will tell you what happened. And I'm like, oh no, you know, something serious is happening. At first I thought they had an argument in the car, but soon it became clear that it has nothing to do with daddy. And she was just so angry, not upset. You know, when you're angry, but you have tears, you're rageful, but you have tears. It was that state. And it was a very severe state. My daughter, I haven't seen her that angry in a very long time. So as we entered into the elevator, I was trying to make sense of like what happened. And I didn't want to start in the elevator, you know, any process of listening or questioning. She was just telling a story in some incoherent way, which I wasn't understanding. So we come home, she sits on the couch and it escalates. She's screaming and crying and, you know, saying it's not fair, it's this, it's that. And I am not understanding any of it. And here is the hard part. I had so much stuff going on in terms of work. My brain was busy, preoccupied. I was not emotionally present and not ready for that moment. All I could think of in that moment is, oh gosh, this seems serious and big and I'm not ready for this. Oh, I hope this will stop right now. And I couldn't become present for her. I was calm. I wasn't losing my temper, yelling at her or anything like that. But it was hard mentally to put myself in the position of listening and assisting her. And she was just ballistic. She threw her socks across the room at some point, and I did some ineffective things. And the first thing was I started asking questions in the moment, which is not effective. Because when they're in that emotional state, asking further questions triggers them more. So I said, I'm not understanding, I said, Ella, what you're trying to tell me. So what happened? Tell me from the beginning. And she started directing her anger towards me. Mm-hmm. You never understand. You're not understanding. And so she started saying those kind of things. And I worked very hard, I'm telling you, to put myself, to do some self-talk and not think about other things and just to be present. It took me a while. And then eventually I was able to tell myself, look, Anna, you don't have to understand what's happening. Just be present for now and see what happens. And that's what I did eventually. And I think it took 15, 20 minutes, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And here is the key. When children are angry at first, they have that energy that is fight energy that they want to do something. She wasn't doing much of that. She was just sitting there, but I could feel the anger. The key is to bring them from mad to sad, because once they are sad, they start to cry, then it's easier to comfort them for us. And that eventually that happened for us. I was just looking at her with this compassionate look as much as I could, trying to be understanding. I wasn't saying any words. And eventually she, you know, cried and didn't make sense of the story. And at some point when she was calmer, I said, so can I ask you again just to tell me what happened, like from the beginning? Because I wanted to understand, why is my child so upset? Something had happened in school, and I don't want to go in detail. It's kind of a bullying incident that has an ongoing issue with some other child and all that. So this was a serious matter for my child. Yeah. And here is the thing that I want parents to know, is that after I listened and all that to her feelings, I still wanted to know because I felt it was very serious. And then she shared the story, what has happened, how the teacher handled and how things went. And I asked her when she was done with her tears, so what should we do now? Because I feel as a parent that I need to make a phone call to your teacher and some steps need to be taken. And she agreed. She said, yes, mommy. And so I went and I called the teacher in that moment and we talked for a length of time and the teacher agreed. She explained furthermore what has happened and she agreed to make some changes in the classroom environment. I don't want to share too much, but but the key is, one, I was unable to get into that state, which is very hard sometimes because we don't have time. How inconvenient. My child is having a hard time. I'm not ready for this. But then I didn't need to do much, right? All I told myself is just be present. Just look at her and just be there. You don't have to say much. And truly, we don't have to say much in those moments. And by allowing them to experience their feelings while being present is key. What I did in the moment, and maybe you can share how you did with your daughters, is my facial expression has to remain compassionate as much as possible and say less words. Stay next to your child. In this case, I was just next to her on the couch. And you can make eye contact with your child. Tell, you know, show them that you are present and allow them to experience and acknowledge, validate their feelings if need be. In this case, she was not open to anything. She was just like full of anger. But once the anger turned into sadness, then she was able to hear me too. When I said, oh my gosh, that was so unfair. When I validated, she says, yes, and this is not the first time that it happened. So then it turned into this dialogue between us, and she shared more and more. And at the end, when we were done, when she was done with her feelings, we both were able to go into the problem-solving stage, which is the second stage. The first stage, I think, the phase is to listen to the emotions and not jump into conclusion, problem solving, rescuing mode as often. It's our like natural response, right, as parents, but withhold that first problem solving response. And then the second phase, when the emotions were done, we were able to brainstorm together. So what shall we do? Do you think I should go to school tomorrow and have a meeting? But because it was a serious matter, she said, mommy, maybe you should talk to the teacher first before coming to school. Mm-hmm. So I did. That was how we solved this problem together. And I hope this is helpful for my listeners. And if you have anything to add, Marie-Lupe.
Yeah, well, first acknowledge what a gift you gave her just by being present and by allowing all those big feelings and being there. And I see how hard it was for you, and I've been in your shoes many times. Sometimes it's like, oh, I can't bring myself to be this present right now. But when we do, and here's where having compassion for our own selves and send love to our inner child in that moment is crucial, so we can really, really pay attention to them. And what a gift. I think she went that deep because she felt the safety that you were providing. So I think you touched on something crucial when you said she was pointing her anger towards me. Sometimes our children do that, and it's not because they're actually angry at us. It's because we provide so much safety so they can actually bring all that's hard. And when we listen with compassion, it's truly a gift, because then they can offload that, get it off their chest, off their emotional backpacks. And then it's like a reset button, as you were saying, in which now the thinking portion of the brain is restored and back in functioning. And now they have, without all that clutter, emotional clutter, now they can think clearly and actually come to their own solutions, as you're beautifully illustrating. So just wanted to thank you for being that presence for her and for teaching others how to do this because I've seen it over and over. I love what you said about your nonverbal cues about being present and looking into her eyes. And I would just add that if your child is little, coming down to their level so that you're not this tower presence in front of them, just like mostly with nonverbal signals, you convey the message, I'm here, you're safe, I'm right here, I'll take care of you. This is, as your listener was saying, this is not an emergency. I'm right here. If you're sending this and you're looking into their eyes, or trying, because sometimes they will try to avoid that, but when you're saying with your nonverbal signals, I'm right here, they can go so deeply and expel all those yucky feelings. Just last night, we were doing that with my little one who was having such a massive, I wouldn't say tantrum, but like emotional expression that's agitated. All I did was provide the safety and the reassurance that there was nothing wrong with this. And you could see on the other side, like how sweet she was. Her muscle tone was relaxed. She had like a sweet gaze. She could finally sustain my eye contact for long periods. And you see this sweetness and this liberated state in which they get after these type of emotional expressions. So again, just to thank you for giving her that safety and that gift of your presence.
The key is, yes, not to forget, is to, and this could be hard, I'm not just saying this is easy. In those moments when our children are experiencing big feelings, we spoke about in that episode how to stay calm about our own state of emotions that can rise. Today, I'm not going to talk about that. Today, I want to focus mainly on the child, how we assist the child through the emotions. Mm-hmm. I think our role is to normalize feelings for them, because feelings come and go, they come and go. It's just a pattern of life. And when we do this kind of process as often as we can, of course, it's not humanly possible to do it for every cry, right? You don't have time and there's various reasons. But when we practice this kind of parenting, then children are not scared of their own feelings. Right? We also normalize, we name their feelings. Again, it depends on the age. My child is old enough to know that she's feeling anger and rage and all of that. I don't need to name it for her in this moment. If she was a preschooler, I would ask her to name what she's feeling. That's frustration. But I've already done that work. She's 10, so she knows what she's feeling. Yeah. It would be even silly if I said that, oh my gosh, Ella, you're feeling so much anger. She would just yell at me and she would say, Mom, you know, it's not natural. So there is different ways we provide this emotional support for different ages. The way we do for toddlers is different. The way we do it with preschoolers is different. The way we do with older kids like my kid is totally different. And with infants and babies is completely different. Yeah. What matters is that we understand that they need us in those moments. They need a attuned caregiver to walk them through this process. And I'm going to talk about this. We have a question that is so relevant to this topic. That's why I want to take a deep dive sort of and speak about this today.
Yeah.
The key is to connect to your child's inner experience in that moment and not reject or deny their experience, which could be hard because we want that to stop. We want their pain to go away. We do everything just to make things better and happier for our children. But that's not really a good gift. The gift is to allow them to experience this human experience so that they can have better insight and perspective about them, about others, and, you know, their life in general. But that first step of connecting emotionally is key. And second phase is the problem-solving phase.
Yeah.
So, but many of us jump into problem-solving phase right away because we want the pain or the tears to go away. It's hurtful for us to see our children cry like that.
Yeah, what we don't know when we start on this journey is that actually the problem is not the tears. The tears are actually what are taking care of the problem. So the healing happens as those tears come out. So when we're trying to prevent those tears from coming out, we're actually as you were saying, not giving them this gift of liberation from all those upset feelings that are actually the ones causing all this off-track behavior that we can see in different forms.
Yes. And also, I want to highlight one more thing. It doesn't matter if we understand what's happening with the child. Like in the beginning, I was in that logical state of mind. I wanted to know what happened. Tell me the story from beginning to end. But then I caught myself because my child is not ready to use this coherent storytelling to tell me what happened. That comes afterwards, yes, after she processes the emotional part. But of course, I was not in a good state of mind at the moment. Know that it doesn't matter what they're crying about.
Yeah.
I know it's sometimes parents say, but I want to help, but I want to help. Mm. No, you are helping through this process of co-regulation, which I'm going to talk about later. And that's helping already. You don't need to know the whole story to help them through the emotions. Our main job is to help them through the emotion at the moment, and then we can get back to the story.
Yeah, and I would love to add also that children often pin big feelings to small pretexts. So I'm sure you've seen a toddler losing it about what we consider a ridiculous thing of like, oh my God, I can't believe she's on the floor with this massive tantrum because of this tiny thing. But actually, it is a pretext, but they cannot sometimes face the fear full on. So I cannot get mad about this massive thing, but I can sure get mad about a tiny drop of toothpaste that fell into my pajamas. So it's like sometimes the bigger the feeling, the smaller the pretext. The pretext is just like a can opener. So if we fix and fix and fix so that we're trying to avoid these feelings, we're actually doing them a disservice. And this is where we come up in this dynamic of the child says, I want orange juice, and you bring the orange juice and say, no, but not in that cup. So you bring the other cup, but no. It's like, wow, what's up with this? It's just a pretext. So it's like, oh yeah, children do this. Every child does this. And usually it's helpful to know that they pin big feelings to little things. So even if they're crying about a tiny thing, that cry is a phenomenal opportunity to upload things that have been hard. So this is just like the last straw. This is just the, like, I can't hold it anymore. I cannot deal with this because there's accumulation of feelings. So sometimes they will cry about what we think are insignificant things. But we can use that pretext really well with them, and we can say, yeah, sweetie, you really wanted the blue cup, but I think you're okay with the red one today. And with this, we give them like permission. We open the floodgates, and then here comes the emotional expression. And then they will be back to their cooperative selves again, and they will be able to take that other cup, and it doesn't really matter because it wasn't really about the blue cup. So it's like, oh, once I understood this, things really started to turn in my relationship with my daughter, who's 9. But when she was a toddler, here I was trying to please and fix and prevent her from crying. And once I allowed this, it's like, oh, this new child emerged.
Yes. Not minimizing their emotions is key. To us, it seems like a ridiculous small item, but to them, that's big. That's their world, right? What else is going to happen in their world?
Yeah.
All emotions matter. When children have big feelings, that's the reality for them. That's their inner reality. We need to honor that, respect that, and allow those emotions to come. But when we don't have time, when we're pressed for time, I understand, you know, you don't have to do this all the time. Sometimes you can postpone a cry or even use a distraction in the moment. It's not like if you're not doing this every time your child cries, there is a cry and there is a cry. Okay, then let me go one step deeper too, since I said that. The key is to know your child. Like when I said, when my daughter came out of that car, I knew it was serious because I know my child, right? She doesn't cry over everything like that. So I knew this is like a serious matter, and it truly was a serious matter. Every parent needs to develop that understanding and knowing of their child, and they do. Most often, as parents, we know. This is what I would suggest. On a scale of 1 to 5, let's say your child is crying, a toddler, a preschooler, a kid of my child's age, it doesn't matter. On a scale of 1 to 5, try to identify to yourself in your mind, how big is this issue for the child? Is it 5, an intense emotion, or is it 3, or is it just 1? Let's about the cup, or you said no to TV viewing, or something they didn't like, right? So there is a degree of being upset and having big emotions. For me, it was 5. So when you identify what level your child's emotional intensity is, you need to craft your own compassion response to match that. Otherwise, it will be this inauthentic, ingenuine experience. And I have witnessed this many times, and you can perhaps speak, Marie-Lupe. Yeah. And when I say compassion response, is mainly the nonverbal cues are very important, because when your child is in that emotional moment, words don't matter. That part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex that is responsible for language and words, is not active at the moment. So they are very right brain, like emotional brain activated. So, and their brain is going to perceive your nonverbal cues. And we need to communicate safety. So how do you do that? Through your facial expression, through your tone of voice, through your body gestures. It doesn't matter what you say in those moments. Try to say less, but communicate more with your facial expression. Yeah. Intensity. My child's intensity is 5. She's so upset. I need to reach out and have level 5 compassion on my face and in my tone and in, you know what I mean, in my body posture. So I'm not non-threatening, but I am expressing this love and compassion, and it matches her experience. That's when things shift immediately, big time.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree completely. And one key piece to be able to provide that compassion is, again, to have compassion in yourself first, and really, I don't know, get into this state of taking care of your own inner child who might be suffering. When we see our children cry that passionately, it can trigger so many things and we want it to stop. But if you can really take a deep breath, and I know you've talked about this in other podcasts, but first compassion with yourself, and then that genuine compassion and presence is the healing presence and the healing force. So tears alone are not healing. But when you're anchoring your child by being next to them and with that strong presence, with this attitude, as you were saying, nonverbally mostly, of saying, I'm right here, I'm right here. And you listen without trying to fix, you just listen. And you just sit down comfortably or as comfortable as you can, but provide that safety, provide that gentle eye contact, that attunement. They feel that because our brains are interconnected. And then they can really go deep. And actually, the deeper they go, the more safe they feel. So actually, the other way around, they're feeling so safe that they can go really, really deep. This is what I'm saying. So sometimes it's going to look like as you're pouring all your love and attention, then they escalate. But it's actually a really good sign, because it's like they're accessing those really, really deep, scary experiences that may be from yesterday, but may be actually coming from a while ago when they were born, or if there was a huge separation or hospital interventions when they were little. Those things, those hard things, don't just evaporate. They stay in our brains. And when we allow our children to explore and go deep, then they can access them and let go of them forever. So it's really, really powerful. And this is how we actually heal trauma.
Go ahead. No.
Yeah, I was listening to this wonderful podcast the other day, and Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese monk who is one of the spiritual leaders in the world, was actually talking about compassionate listening, he calls it. And he's describing just this. And he says, this is what the world needs to heal, for people to really listen. Because this is when you're listening, you're giving the other person the opportunity to end their suffering. So he was referring to this as the cure for the pain of humanity. So we can do this actually at home. We are changing history when we are providing this opportunity for our children to work on what's hard and let go of it, so they're liberated. They can try again next time, and this is how they gain resilience. This is how they become adventurous, and this is how they become their true selves, because they were trapped before by these yucky feelings that they were carrying. So this can work for minor things and for really deep, profound, scary experiences that they might be carrying.
Yes, absolutely. Let's move on to our second segment, Marilupe, and answer some listener questions. But before we do that, I would love to remind our listeners that they can submit their questions at any time because I compile them. They can send us a voicemail question, and the number to call is 732-763-2576. Email info@authenticparenting.com. They can post their questions in our private Facebook community, and you don't have to remember all of those places. Just remember one, authenticparenting.com/contact. And for international listeners, they can use this tool. I have it on my contact page called SpeakPipe. It's just a button you click and record your voice. And if you don't like the way you recorded the first question, you can erase and re-record again, and it comes to me directly. So please send in your questions about this or other topics, and we would be happy to answer them. And to begin our first question, it came from Jordana in our private Facebook group, and I love this question. She says, words that hurt, hate, stupid, dumb, mean words, potty language, how do I get to stop from happening all the time? So, Marilupe, I want to ask you first, what tips and suggestions do you have for this poor mom?
Yeah. So I don't know from the question how old the child is, but the very first thing I would like to say is that your child is good, really, really good, even if they're using this type of language. So there's a wonderful article on the Hand in Hand website written by the founder, Patty Wheeler, that is titled Bad Words from Good Kids. So what she's saying, and I love this, is that your child is good and they are caught in this dynamic, not intentionally, but it's like a contagious thing. So either they heard this word somewhere else, they heard at home maybe, or somebody told it to them and they were the target of these words. So when they come home and they bring these words, they're actually trying to offload the tension. They sense that these words carry a lot of tension behind them. And they got trapped in this tension dynamic. And they're just trying to see by saying them again and again, what these words really provoke, what they can do, what is their power. So they're experimenting in a way, and they're caught up in this trap. So it's the first thing to remember is that they're good kids and they're just caught up with this. So they need our help. So if we just ignore it and help, it will pass. It's actually a disservice to them. But the solution that Patty's proposing in the article, I think, is brilliant, because it's actually to help them dissolve this tension through play. So depending on the age of the kid, this can look a little differently. And this also has been advised by the amazing Larry Cohen on playful parenting. So when they come with a bad word, if this is a small child, and I've done this with tremendous results, let's say they come with a bad word and they are saying it to me. So of course, if I overreact, they see like I'm sending the message like, yes, this word has a lot of power. So he says something like, yeah, we don't really use that word at home, but don't you call me, if it is a four-year-old, don't you call me banana head. So you come up with this silly word that's non-offensive. So because, and then you sort of like deviate the attention from that word into another made-up word that's non-offensive, but you act as, of course, playfully. You act like, oh, I can't believe you just called me banana head. Like if you call me banana head, I'm going to have to go and give you a million kisses. And then you engage in this connection, in this connective play that brings laughter. And that laughter dissolves the tension. So of course, they're going to want to do it again and again. Like, okay, banana head. And when you are playing with them in this way, they're like, you're eroding that tension one laughter at a time. So they have this tension and they need to dissolve it somehow. So play can be a great way. So we're not necessarily, I don't know, saying, yay, go ahead and call me those names. But we sort of, if we turn it into a non-offensive thing, they can dissolve that tension. If the child is older, I've heard other wonderful hand-in-hand instructors like Tosha Shore, for example, the co-author of the book Listen. She has three boys, and she has an anecdote about the older boys were kind of like tense, and they had a meeting. I don't remember the details exactly, but before having to compose themselves at grandma's house, she actually provided 1 minute or with a time limit in which the boys could like really say it all. So if you provide, I don't know, let's go into the car where nobody's listening, where it's safe. So for 1 minute, go and say all the words that you want to say, sort of like to drain it out of your system. And they loved it. So they like got it out of their system, and then they were able to like, okay, not be trapped by this anymore. So it sounds a little counterintuitive maybe, but to go with play, we're not just dismissing it, but we're addressing it in a way that they feel like we are on their side and we provide connection, and the laughter can dissolve the tension around these words. So again, suggest that for people to read the actual article, and I can send you the link so that they can see it themselves. But this is the main idea, is your child is good and they're just caught up in this dynamic.
Yes, that's great. Let me add a few things from my perspective. I would guess, since we don't know the age of this child, but I can guess and guarantee that this is a 4 to 5 year old kid. And I have never met a child in my life who doesn't go through this stage of learning potty words and using them. So this is all normal and it's just a phase. But when you are in the phase, it doesn't seem like it's a phase. This can create feelings for the parent. I know not every parent has this attitude that you're describing, Marilupe. Some parents can be tense, uptight around certain words, especially that involves body, sexuality, potty language, right? Based on their history or the way they were raised. Maybe they were admonished and punished, and I don't know how things were handled in their past. So I meet a lot of parents who have strong feelings around this topic when a child uses the word stupid, for example.
Yeah.
In my household, I never had issue with that word, but some people consider that the S word. So every parent has their own standards and we need to respect where they come from, right? It's not, we're not there to judge them. But if you find yourself having strong feelings around this kind of potty language, for example, and it rises anger in you and you get triggered, that's a different story. It's your story. It's not related to your child's development. Usually this potty language exploration, every child goes through the period when they learn the word poopy head, they call everyone poopy head. It's around a moral development when they learn about what's right, what's wrong, and they start to explore what's wrong. They explore their power. They, you know, they test that, but in the safety of their home. And oftentimes, I think parents fear that children will do this in public places, but I know for sure in most cases, if we allow them to express and have fun and be creative and playful, as you described at home, it loosens its tension and they don't carry it to public places most often.
Yeah.
You can, I would even say, be playful and create a song together using all the words that your child is, create a rap song and use all the wording, say it out loud, or you can turn the word, let's say, but, right? Children say mm-hmm. but all the time and they find it funny. You can turn that word into a different word. You can add a few other syllables and create mm-hmm. into but ingolo mangolo bungalo and say, can you say that instead of but? And your child is giggling and laughing. And that's what you want, because for us, those words have more emotional charge, but for them, they're just words and they're just funny and they're exploring their power. I think let's be a little more understanding.
Absolutely. And I love what you said at the beginning, because I myself was not in a state of being playful and silly with these words a couple of years ago. What allowed me to be that goofy and go along with it, and even, as you said, invent silly songs, was actually working on the feelings that these brought on my listening partnerships. Again, what I was referring before, this really profound exchange of listening, compassionate listening that we do between adults to support each other. That's where the first step for me was coming there and exploring, oh my God, I can't believe my daughter is doing this, and exploring all those past experiences, what this word would trigger in me, how would my family have responded if I had said a bad word, all those things that I could sort of like clear that up so that then I can have a fresh presence and the silliness and the goofiness to come up. The first thing I think was for me to explore these ideas and feelings, mostly in the listening partnership. So this is where I was able to work on that side of the story that was mine and own it and heal it and sort of like scrub my mind from those early experiences. And then I could bring the silliness. But there was no way I could have been silly starting in this journey at all. Mm-hmm. I thought like, yeah, no.
And the more we resist, the more it persists, this kind of behavior. Children try to see, why is it that mom is so uptight around this? Let me do it again. Let me say it again. Because they want to understand themselves what's happening.
Yeah.
I think don't be uptight. It's normal part of development. It will disappear. Try to be playful. For me, playfulness wasn't my first go-to default mode as a parent. My husband is very good at this. I think men are goofy and it's easier a lot. And for a lot of women, I don't know.
Yeah.
For me, I had to learn. But once I learned, like we have code languages for fort. If somebody is, you know, we have our internal jokes as a family now. Just have fun as a family. These are bonding experiences. And your child, Jordana, is not going to be a terrorist or he or she's not going to go around and call people names and things like that. Yeah. Just view it as it's just a phase and they all go through this.
Yeah. And then if you don't have it in you right now to be playful, because sometimes you have a headache or you're really not in a space to allow that, you do get to set a limit without playfulness. You can say, sweetie, you can't let you say that right now. And if you need to remove the child from the room with you, I mean, sort of like, we need some space from your sister. I don't know. You get to say also, not right now. I can't let you say that.
Yeah.
And if there's tension, and then maybe you move into a listening episode because they have all these feelings. It doesn't have to be playful, but I think it's a really fresh way to address it if you're in the right place to do that.
Yes, there's a great episode I have recorded with another colleague around this topic. I think there's two. One, I think, is around the word hate. I would link it in the show notes and why it's okay for children to use the word hate and what it means. I'm not going to talk about this today, but there's another great episode we have done about creative and playful parenting, how you can, we highlighted and outlined so many wonderful examples and techniques. I really would love, I think it's 2 years ago, that episode. So I will have it linked up in the show notes for the new listeners. And to add to your point, it's important to explain to children that these are things we say in our home, but never at school or at grandma's house or in a public place. You know, you want to teach that lesson too. I mean, yes, we're having fun. We're creating a rap song using all the bad words that they say, but it doesn't mean that we don't teach them a lesson or set a limit. That's an important part of this as well.
Yeah, beautifully said. I agree completely.
Mm-hmm. Marilupe, let's move on to our third segment and share our favorite finds. What do you have for us, for our listeners?
I have two things to share today. So the first one is a book that is really delicious. It's not just a really good read. It's so profound that you're actually experiencing things as you read along. I've cried, I've laughed out loud, I've been really moved and touched, and I just go back and every paragraph is just delicious. The name of the book is Belonging. The title of the book, Belonging, and the subtitle is Remembering Ourselves Home by the amazing Toko Pott Turner. And I'm not through the book yet, but I'm just enjoying it so much that I definitely want to share this one. And the other one is a really fun podcast for kids that I started listening to recently with my girls. It's hilarious and informative. It's from NPR and it's called Wow in the World. And every episode is like a chock full of wisdom and amazing things in the world, but with so much humor. And I don't know, it's just so well done that it's really enjoyable, not just for kids, but actually for the parents who are listening.
Oh, sounds great. I'll check that out. My daughter likes podcasts. I'm not sure if she listens to that one, but she listens to Brains On and a couple of others that are very educational and fun and entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what are you recommending as your favorite find of the month?
Mine actually is a find. Like I was at the library sale and I got a book for $1. And it's an old book, but what an amazing book. It's called The Dance of Anger, A Woman's Guide to Changing the Patterns of Intimate Relationships by Harriet Lerner, PhD. And it's a fantastic book. She's a feminist. It's about anger. She explores female anger, particularly mother-daughter relationship, partners. It's really, I haven't finished it yet, but so far she has great suggestions, insights. I really enjoyed the best dollar I've ever spent.
Wow.
Yes. So I highly recommend this book. If and you can, I think, get it from any library.
Thank you. I'll check it out.
Yes. And Mari Lupe, I want to thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for joining me today, sharing your story, your insights, and this wonderful space with me. I truly enjoyed your presence.
Oh, me too. I think we met because it was meant to be, and I felt your amazing soul since the moment I met you. So I'm really, really thankful for this opportunity.
Oh, thank you. I know. I feel the same way.